What's up, everybody? It's Sam with Rowdy Alternative, and today we're with Roger Klein of Roger Klein and the Peacemakers. How are you, man?
Ace is Sam. How are you?
Good, good. Before we jump into everything, man, just kind of let us know what's going on with you. I know, like, summer's kicking off. I don't know what you got planned for, like, shows, anything like that. What's keeping you busy?
Let's see. We just released my 11th studio record. That was a big push. We got that done early March. So now it's been, I guess, 2 months, but it's just been a little bit of the dust settling. As you know, you're in showbiz, like you ride that enthusiasm as much as you can. So we do a bunch of interviews and a bunch of shows here and there. Oh, my wife just brought me the
awesome album
cover. There we go. That's a lot of glare. Self promo. Anyway, that dust is settling a little bit, but we're getting ready to go put on our 29th year of our festival down in Mexico. That starts third week of May, Circus Mexicus, in Puerto Peñasco or Rocky Point. What else is going on? Then after that, we hit the road for about 80 days in the U.S. And so we'll be packing our bags, getting on a plane to get on a bus and hit stages all over the U.S. for the rest of the year. So that's the big plan.
Awesome.
In the meantime, I'm just messing around being like a homebody, really domestic. I'm doing the, I think it's in all the rage right now, the Swedish death purge or something like that, where you get rid of all the shit that you've been hanging on for too long. I'm trying to do that. You know, I've gone coast to coast, north to south now for 30 years of touring, and I've collected a lot of like really cool junk. I'm just gonna figure the coolest of the cool junk.
Absolutely. Yeah. I haven't heard of that, but it sounds very therapeutic, I guess.
Yeah. I hadn't heard of it. The guy who actually did the cover for Hell to Breakfast, he's a local legend. His name's Bob Bosbell. He's a riot, and we were at his house where his studio was, and he's got stacks and stacks of his drafts of paintings and things. And I was like, "What the hell is this?" He's like, "I don't know. I got to do a Swedish death purge." And I was like, "I don't know what that is." He goes, "It's in the literature. It's just in Sweden, I guess the old folks, when they don't want to bequeath a bunch of junk to the young folks, they go through and just keep the good stuff and give the other stuff out." So,
absolutely,
I need to do that.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the cover art and the artwork for that record, which we will be diving into. But I was just going to tell you, like, so I collect vinyl, and half the reason I buy vinyl is for the artwork. And that was the first thing that, like, really, you know, drew me to your record. I'm like, okay, I want to frame this. Like, this looks like something I want to frame. So it's pretty, that's pretty cool. He just had stacks of those kinds of paintings. Like, were they all his?
Yeah, he's got a studio that's right off of his house. It's in Cave Creek, Arizona, old cow town, really cool. And yeah, he's just got that painter's paper is like really thick. He does a lot of watercolor. When it dries, it doesn't dry flat, so it's kind of like bubbly.
Mm.
So he's all over the place. He's just got stacks and stacks of his drafts and iterations and studies. And I was looking at some of them, he's like, "Yeah, take it, dude. I gotta get rid of this stuff anyway." So, I actually found one of his iterations for Hell to Breakfast, and if I was prepared, I'd get it sitting on my piano. If I jump out for 5 seconds, like, "Yeah, just take it."
That's awesome.
But yeah, he's great. I've been a fan of his art for a long, long time, and finally, I was like, "You know what? I'm just gonna reach out to the man, the myth, the legend, Bob." And he was like, "Yeah, I'd love to." Met over margaritas. He loved the title. He's like, "Let me run with it." So that's what he came up with.
Perfect. And before we do get into Hell to Breakfast and everything, you know, we got to talk about 30 years of Fizzy Fuzzy Big and Buzzy, if you don't mind. And and at least with the crowd I run around with, this is definitely a record that I wasn't born when it came out. So like, I didn't mean to like throw that.
Love it. My career is older than
you. But what I'm getting at is that like, this is something that has, even though like it has still been an ever present record, like throughout my life and with buddies of mine. And I'm kind of wondering to you, just looking back from then to now, like with new generations, like each generation connecting to that record, I guess just quite simply, like how does that make you feel, just like every generation?
Really honored, really grateful, really good. It's all good. I get to see now when we go to anywhere, actually, whether it be Arizona or New York City, or doesn't matter where we go, I see a wide swath of the age groups. There's the vintage cut like myself, and then I see like the 40s and the 30s and now even the 20s, and it's pretty cool. There's, what is this? Usually it's this, like when I'll find a really young person, kind of like your age or a little mm-hmm. younger at a show, and we encounter each other and they want a photo. They're like, hey, can I get a photo? My mom and dad really love you. That's cool. And I was like, so how did you come across our music? Like, oh, you know, stuck in the minivan going to soccer games. Cool, that works.
Yeah, it's better than the soccer mom music, you know? Like that's what I think. But yeah, and also like whether this record or any record you've put out really over the years, and hopefully this makes sense, but like when you look back at music that you've had in the world for a while now, does the meaning of it or the themes of it ever change for you as the songwriter? Like, does it like change like the way you feel about it or the way you view maybe what the record is about? Like, or is it always just like that time in your mind? Like I sometimes albums to me seem like they're like time, like places in time, like as an artist releases them, does maybe the meaning of that record or what you are trying to say in that record like ever change as the person who would put it out over time?
If I get your meaning, like we're talking about Fizzy Fuzzy Big and Buzzy, do I feel the same about those songs now as I did then? Is that kind
of... Sure, yeah. Or any record really that you put out, like is that a common thing? Like does it change?
It's really great when if you're growing or you know changing, hopefully it's growth, if the message in your song somehow goes to a different level and actually informs you as a writer, and it's valuable or meaningful, it's a really great moment. I've been singing songs of mine. I probably won't be able to come up with an example right now that I say a song that's 10 years old and I'll be singing it sometime. Whoa, that really has that hits different now.
Right. Yeah.
Because of the world has changed and I have changed, but the song, it cuts through in a different way. It's a really cool feeling. It doesn't happen like all the time or certainly not with every song, but yeah, it does happen quite a bit.
Yeah. And that's what I meant. And also like, with what I really like about your music, both, you know, with the refreshments and to now, like it's you can't put it in a box. Like, and I think that's
good.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, it shows like with artists and bands, whoever that I really connect with, this is just like they're always progressing. I guess progressing is a word to use for it. Like it's always changing and like experimenting with different styles. Like have you always felt that way? And has that always been pretty natural for you?
I, as an artist, really one of my guiding creative principles is to never become a parody of myself. There's mm-hmm. there's consistency, and then there's consistency in your writing and your message and your posture, etc., over time. But then there's also, if you just try to make the same record twice or song twice, I don't find any value in that. And so I'm always working to do something different, and it doesn't get easier. Like your first record, you know, takes very short amount of time. Well, not a very short amount of time, but it doesn't take as long to write as your second record or next to your third. I found the creative process, because I'm always challenging myself to break some kind of new ground and yet remain somewhat consistent as Roger Klein, the songwriter, it's a tough balance to strike, and it gets harder over time. And I'm really glad I've heard other, you know, other writers say the same. Lucinda Williams, Leonard Cohen, Bob Dylan, the pretty big hitters, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, it doesn't get any easier.
Right. And I think like another cool thing from my point of view is that like you have those groups have been around like 80s, 90s bands, and like they're sometimes labeled like legacy acts, right? And sure, like yeah. Some of them will ride off like their greatest hits until they're done, which nothing wrong with that. Like, heck, if that's what you want to do, that's what you want to do. But it's like with you, like you're putting stuff out, and every time it's like a different style, a different sound, at least to me. And
cool. Good.
Yeah, and like it's cool seeing like you grouped in with like I know like like the Red Dirt scene, I'm a big fan of, and it's cool seeing like you kind of grouped in with that. It's kind of funny just how that works, I guess, you know?
Yeah, well, that's a really honest music scene, and those are some really creative folks. They're hardworking. They're really sewn to a certain part of their heartland, right? It feels like a very honest scene. It hasn't been co-opted by anything commercial. I mean, certainly there have been. That's a just a sort of generalization. I just find that a lot of the Red Dirt bands I listen to are like really good bands, you know? Mm-hmm. Really good writers, and I've met a lot of them, just really good folks. So yeah, it's cool. And the Texas, Oklahoma, the artists are aware of this. They call it velvet handcuffs. They're like, well, we never have to leave Texas or Oklahoma. I'm like, yeah, but you should leave Texas and Oklahoma because there's people out here who want to hear you too.
Yeah, I could attest to that. I'm from Cincinnati. I was lucky enough to live in Oklahoma and Texas, so that's how I, you know, discovered those guys. So it's cool seeing, especially in like recent years, I think like it's a boom, like the Red Dirt Texas scene, like bingo. Everywhere.
Last year's Boys from Oklahoma reunion really proved it, you know.
Oh yeah.
And that scene got a lot of help from kind of an invisible saint of everybody's, Josh Crutchmer, who wrote things for, I think, the Troubadours and Shelby Stone and Cross Canadian Ragweed and even my band. He brought people out of the shadows to the fore for just a second. Mm. And it helped to really create a community. And they demonstrated that with those stadium shows. And the talent list was amazing. I went to one of the shows and I had a backstage pass. But as I look around the corner, I was going to go say hi to Cody. I was like, no fucking way. That line is all just curved around the whole stadium. I'm not gonna get in there. So I just went and sat in my seat and enjoyed the show.
For sure. And shout out to Josh. Yeah, because he's I mean, those books he wrote, like they're like the Red Dirt Bible. And like it you do get to know these artists that you'd never, you know, you probably never would. Like, you know, so shout out to him for sure. But let's dive into your album. Came out in March, I believe, and held a breakfast and
whoops.
You're good.
Telephone call. Okay, cool.
We're all good.
All these devices talk to each other, except mine.
Oh yeah. All good. We're good to go. But let's talk about Hell to Breakfast. I loved it. It was great to listen to, and I also like had me listen to all your other stuff again. It was nice to re-listen. But I guess first of all, there was a bit of time since your record before that.
Yeah, it was like 9 years. Some say nine. I think we released in 2017, so that would be 9 years.
Yeah.
We released Native Heart in 2017.
Gotcha.
That was our last studio record.
Right. So with that, all that has happened, obviously, a lot has happened since then, and then to now, to when you released Hell to Breakfast. Is it safe to say that whatever happened, that time space like really pushed you or influenced you to maybe put this out, get back into the rhythm of it? Can you kind of like tell us how you navigated that?
Yeah. I guess we'll frame it with the time lapse between the two records, right? Typically we would release a record every 18 months to 3 years, I think was our track record for the first 10. And then here's 11. The 11th record takes 9 years to make. Mm. A lot was involved. Part of it was my artistic posture. I told you earlier, we were discussing, I didn't want to make the same thing again. I also, because we're an independent rock band or independent band, we basically use our own label to do one thing, and that's put the music out. However, whatever the zeitgeist is of the day, and now it's streaming, which did not exist in 1996, you know, when I put out my first record. Physical distribution isn't that big a deal, i.e. records on shelves people don't much care about unless they're an audiophile like yourself and they like LPs. All those things were always changing, but I think the most important thing for me was I wanted to write. I wanted to love, I wanted the joie de vivre and the thrill and the feel of creation to be enjoyable again, not obligatory. I didn't want to just have to put out another record because it was time. I was like, you know, I've done this for almost 30 years at that point. And I don't want to just produce something to produce it. I want to make sure that first and foremost, I liked to still write. And there was a spell there where I didn't want to sit down on a couch with a guitar or plink on a piano or carry my notebook around and write poetry for a while. And everybody lived through the same time, but in different ways. Like COVID was a drag and the political atmosphere is just toxic. All those things weigh on artists. And I've talked to my friends and we all kind of have the same thing. But for me, it was like all that stuff. Plus, when are you going to make a new record? Well, thanks for asking, but I just really want to, first of all. So we kind of took our time and went into the studio little by little, piece at a time, and kind of experimented over the course of those years. Actually, I'd say that we were in the studio, whether it be like once a month or every day for a week, for probably 2.5 or 3 years. And we changed a lot of those songs during that time. And I wrote a few more. And when finally it was like, yeah, this is the record, then that was the record. We just let time be on our side for once.
Yeah. And it seems like, obviously, and you kind of hit on it, like now the way music is, it's streaming and it's very singles driven, it seems like. Yeah. You know, one after another, musicians, a lot of like up and comers, especially, like they just got to get their stuff out there. And it seemed like evolving into that, like for an artist such as yourself who has been through like, you know, CDs, you know, just the changing landscape like that.
Yeah, radio was
radio. Exactly. Like, how was that? You kind of hit on it there, but like, how was it like evolving into like streaming and this whole big, like now TikTok, people are making TikToks and stuff. Like, how is it evolving into all that?
It's super weird. and what I probably have to like admit to my, for the very first time, even to myself, is like, I don't really participate very well in some of that change because I don't like it. I don't have a personal, I don't have a TikTok account. I don't have an Insta account. Like all that stuff, even though I know it's absolutely necessary to communicate, especially in a commerce that is art, which is also an oxymoron, is really weird. And I don't like the idea of pursuing likes or being friended. I just want to give my music out and hit a stage. And the presence of a live audience and community for me is the most meaningful thing. So there's this disconnect I feel when we're looking at likes and spins and stuff. It just drives me kind of crazy because I find it hollow. So I'm that old guy, you know. It's like, kids, that's meaningless. Cares, you know, don't look at the likes. It's not good for your self-worth. And yet at the same time, in art that is commerce and vice versa, that's what everybody looks at. Your booking agent goes, well, your spins on Spotify are X and your likes on this are Y. And that's an indicator that you have to keep polished. I just don't participate in that side of the business. So I guess I sort of answered the question. It's a long one. I'm the old guy now who has the cool kids around me going, all right, it's time for you to talk to your audience via Instagram. And I go, okay.
Right. Oh. I mean, like I could talk for hours of people, but I mention it every interview. It's just like the live show to me as a fan is the most important part when it comes to connection. I think like it helps you, you know, discover a band. If you know, stumble into a club, you might see a band playing and it becomes your favorite band and it keeps you coming back.
For sure.
And now with, you know, there's still live shows, obviously, but like now with like the TikTok and everyone wanting to go viral, I feel like some of like the road dog in it for a lot of up and comers, maybe, especially, I feel like that might be like kind of a lost art. Maybe. I don't know. What do you think about that?
You mean live music?
Yeah.
Performing live. I still have a lot of faith in the younger generation's ability to connect with an audience and be proficient enough to deliver music, you know, in time and space, like right there, then. I see as many good young bands now as I did when I was coming up, and I was one of them, you know. I love being blown away by a live performance. So between the sheer amount of music that people can access instantly now and the way that genres have been broken down and people listen to everything without having to be in a click, I think is really good for creativity. And things like YouTube have taught kids, I mean, anybody younger than me, actually even older than me, like how to tease apart the guitar solo on Frickin' Crazy Train or whatever, you know, they have instant access to knowledge that they can apply to their talent and then deliver. And it's, I think it's a really good thing. So last paragraph, I was arguing against my, you know, or I was arguing for my disdain of the thin weight that social media carries. But at the same time, man, this streaming and the knowledge available out there and how people can share ideas is amazing for the creation of music, for the sharing of music. And I'm optimistic. The bands, the young kids I see playing now are fucking badass, way better than I was at their age, which makes me a little jealous, but I'm happy to see it. Yeah, I think it's actually a really good thing. Live music is strong.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But let's get back to your album. Sorry, I kind of trailed off there for a minute, but
No, I'm good at finding ways off the cliff for sure.
Right on. Good. But and you mentioned you don't want to make the same record, right? Like you mentioned that a few times. And I mean, listening to this, like from the first track, it blew me away. Fireflies. I got that right. Fireflies.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm trying to do more stuff by memory and not jot down as many notes. So if I mispronounce something, I apologize. But
don't worry about it.
But Fireflies, like that one blew me away. It's so hard to describe what it sounded like to me. It felt like a very familiar sound. It reminded me of like a lot of the old 90s alternative stuff that I love, but also newer, like southwestern type of, it's a big conglomerate. And I guess, like, do you find yourself, and you kind of hit on this earlier too, but when you experiment in the studio, like every track on here, it sounds different. And I love it like that. Like, I love when albums do that. Is that something that, like, you are, like, it's ever present in your mind? Like, we're going to make this sound like that sound like this. Or is it, like, just comes out? Like how does that usually work for you?
That's the word usually, I don't know if it applies. It's something we employ. Like, for example, if I have a song and I want it to feel a certain way, you know, I'll reference some other song. And usually what I'm referencing is a specific, like a tempo or a hook or a texture. Let me see if I can come up with something specific. In Getaway on Hell's Breakfast, I wanted the hook to be weird, ethereal, almost 70s fuzzy sounding. Mm-hmm. I was like not quite the theremin in Good Vibrations, which is like kind of space agey sound. Yep. And then I referenced the guitar hook from David Bowie's Heroes.
Okay.
And Nick Sterling was in the studio with me at the time. He's like, how do you want this to feel? He was sort of our utility player. Now he's been adopted, if not kidnapped. He's in the band. But I just love that hook. It sets up such a really great feel. It creates the environment. He goes, oh, Robert Fripp, that's my guy. And he's a like crazy genius guy. He just walks off. I'm like, where's he going? And our engineer, who knows him well, he's probably just gonna go nail a part. Walks into the control room. He sits down for 30 seconds, puts his headphone on, tunes his guitar, cranks up his amplifier, sits cross-legged in front of it, like right in front of it, like right there. He goes, okay, go ahead and play that. Hey, Rod, you wanted like the melody, like that, the hook to sound like the melody? I'm like, yeah, exactly. I want that consistency. He goes, ooh. And then he just started going, using the guitar's pickups and his fingers to create that. I don't think he used a pick, and it was like one take and done. Anyway, that's a sort of a reference in a microcosm of how I'll try to channel the song into the feel that I hope it can get. I can't imagine the last time I really wanted a whole record to sound the same. I think it just kind of happens. I don't think we have any records that sound disparate. Like, we might have recorded them in different times, different places, but I think there's always a consistency. Whatever is going to come through sounds like it's consistent. I don't know how that happens.
I gotcha. Yeah, it just seems like, I love asking musicians that, because a lot of the time they're just like, just kind of, you know, kind of happens. Like, that's just how it works. And
I don't know how it works, you know. It's just, maybe it's the medium you're working with. I mean, you're it's how everybody's playing at the time. You definitely capture something of everybody. We're artists, you know, you capture mm-hmm. something of everybody's feelings and emotions, because that's what we do. We channel those. And then there's the big magic eight ball. Like, who knows what's going to come up when you finally finish it. But it's always cool when you dig it. And we liked how Hell to Breakfast came together, and we put the songs all together and sat down and listened to them. Sometimes you get so close to the canvas, you can't even see anymore. So we stepped away from our final cuts for like a week, reconvened, and went, damn, all right, let's put this out.
That's funny. I was kind of about to get into that point too. Like, when, what for you, whether it's like writing the lyrics to recording or whatever, like from start to finish, when you're putting a song together, is there a switch that goes off in your head? Like, okay, this is finished. We are good on this. Or is it, I feel like as an artist, you like, it might be easy to like overdo something. Underdo something. Like, how do you navigate that?
That's a great question. I think it's just one you got to ask all the time. Yeah, it's you're a painter who always has paint on his brush, and like, when to stop, what's your final stroke is always a question. I don't know how you stop that. I know that we've certainly shot too far before, and then you just go, you know what, that last track, let's just take that out of there. Or like, no, that's one percussion syncopation too many. Let's simplify it. Things like that you can do in recording, because you can take it back. I don't know. You just get the feel. You listen to a rough mix in the studio or wherever on your headphones, and then you know if you're in the ballpark.
Yeah, for sure. So when you, and like we were talking about earlier, like, this is, you're very in on the, I'm going to put something out when I want to put something out, when I feel like I want to put something out.
Well, I don't want to say that I've been like, you know, a crusader in that regard, because certainly right. I have not capitulated, but I have been formed by the commercial pressures of the business, where like, hey, your last record was 2.5 years ago and people aren't asking, you know, for interviews anymore, it's time to put out a new record. And that unfortunately can be a really compelling impetus. But this time I was just like, damn, I got 30 years of shit behind me. I'm going to just write for the joy of writing and then release that. Well, anyway, I interrupted you.
No, you're good. Absolutely. And you kind of were getting into it a bit anyway, but like with, and this is just something I've been thinking about a lot when I talk to artists, would it be fair, in the best way, in the best form of the word possible, is like, it is kind of a selfish thing in the best way possible to be like, I'm going to put something out, like, when, like, don't want to be told to put something out, kind of like how what you were just saying, like, would you describe that, I guess, like, it's, you have to be a bit selfish in that aspect, like, it is your story, it's your work, like, yeah. Like, you know, is that kind of like how you feel?
Yeah. I'm ornery, you know, there's a certain amount of like,
I hate to use the word selfish. That was kind of a heavy word.
That's all right. It is like every artist is selfish. I mean, it's just what, it's a fundamental driver for thought and action. Selfishness, how you channel that is what your art is, how it resonates, you know? I guess, you know, it was probably a little selfish for me to say, look, I'm going to look for my joie de vivre. I'm going to look for that artistic spark. And said, I could write a song between now and the end of this interview, but it wouldn't mean anything to me, and it wouldn't challenge me, and it wouldn't mean anything to anybody else. Or maybe it would, I don't know, but I wanted it to be, I love getting going on an emotional train ride when I'm creating. I like everything from joy to despair when I'm searching for sharing something. It's really fun, and I wanted to feel that again. It had been a while, and I didn't want to be forced. So it's like if somebody told a comedian, all right, go ahead, be funny.
Yeah. You
know, I don't want to be told to write a record now. So
absolutely.
I took my time. And then when I was like, wow, I'm sitting on the couch with a guitar and my notebook is in for open here. This is cool. And then I knew I was onto it again.
Right on. And it was fantastic. It was a great record. And I hope people, a lot more people who listen to this who might not have heard of you, definitely give it a spin. And I want to talk a bit about, before we head out here, the festival you mentioned earlier. It's the 29th year of it. Can you kind of give us the history on that? I think I missed that.
Yeah. I think it is 29. Let me get this right. It is to start off, it's called Circus Mexicus, and PH and I, our drummer, and I, at about year four, when it was pretty evident that people were going to keep coming to this crazy thing, we're like, we need to give it a name, because it was just an event. It was just the Peacemakers in Rocky Point. He's like, I don't know, man. It's just such a chaos. It's just such a circus, Circus Mexicus. Like, and I was like, that's hilarious. Let's call it that. Not the best at marketing or branding all the time. We started in 1999, so I guess that would make this the 27th year. Another long story. Back in the day, in the refreshments days, we were connected to the industry through like really big players, so a big booking agent, publishing company, an international record company, and they couldn't find a way to monetize my idea of going to Mexico. They're like, there's no record stores. We can't sell tickets. You know, can't even get you on the radio. Nobody knows who you are. So there was just a flat refusal to participate with the idea, in the idea that we should go down there and play. And no band was forming their own festival. Actually, maybe I take that back. Jane's Addiction might have been doing Lollapalooza by then. But anyways, I just went down there in a van and started knocking on cantina doors down there, being Rocky Point, Mexico. It's 3.5 hours south of where I live here in Tempe. Knocked on cantina doors, and nobody had a stage. They're like, yeah, it sounds cool, but we don't have any stage. Damn. I sat down sort of defeated after visiting a whole bunch of places. And one guy at a place called the Sunset Cantina said, I was getting a beer. He's like, hey, man, I don't have a stage, but we have a roof. And I could like put some pallets up there and some sheet, some plywood, and I'll throw up some extension cords if you guys can bring your PA. It was a deal. So we announced it on the newly formed internet then, and about 150 people showed up, and sound check turned into a performance that went like from a sound check was like 4, and it went, we just kept going. I mean, like 4 to midnight, played every song we knew twice. And then kept playing the songs again. And we didn't know them so good because of how much beer was flowing. But it was a hoot. We just started doing it twice a year. Went from an October and May rotation to, we streamlined it into just June. And then we took May and moved it back to January. So we have a January and June set. Well, January Jam and Circus Mexicus. But anyway, we bring artists from everywhere. In the Red Dirt community, we've had, well, let's see, Dalton Domino, Shelby Stone, American Aquarium, Cross Canadian Ragweed. There's a litany. Thank you. Reckless Kelly.
Yeah.
Mickey.
Mm-hmm.
Who else? Mickey and the Motocross. Lots. But we just invite all the people we like and start playing on stages all over town. It's fun. Goes from Thursday through Sunday.
Wow, that sounds like a blast. And also, so I forgot, yeah, you're from Arizona, right? You're living in Arizona. And I just wanted to say, yeah, Arizona is beautiful. I was there for a short period of time. I was in Sierra Vista, so it wasn't very beautiful. The mountains for sure were beautiful.
45
but
minutes away from my homeland. My family has been running a cattle ranch. You know where Sonora is there?
Sure.
Yeah, we were 10 miles east of Sonora, still are, in the Whetstone Mountains, still running cattle.
Right on.
Third generation rancher and rocker, you know, off we go.
That's awesome. But
yeah, the Klein Ranch is there. We do a gathering there called the Klein Country Campout, usually in the fall. It's a little cooler. You got to come back.
Hell yeah, maybe. But Roger, thanks for hopping on. It is great talking to you. I'm glad we can make this work. I assume people could just find you, Roger Klein and the Peacemakers, just everywhere on the internets and everything.
Thanks.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for hopping on. Everyone, make sure to listen to Hell to Breakfast. Fantastic record. Go check out a show, too. I know you said you have shows coming up towards the end of the year, right?
So 77 U.S. dates, I think, that are on the books now, and we're still booking more. So
absolutely. Yeah. So you guys make sure to do that. Roger, again, thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
Also, make sure to check out Ray's Rowdy, Rowdy Alternative. Just Google us, and we'll pop up. So till next time, thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next time.
Adios. My boots would look good on your bed, and I bet you can do some crazy things with those hips. You've been turning me on all night, so why don't you
you and I. Run and tell your friends who's gonna take you home now.